Yeah, Mark Ryan for the Idaho Conservation League, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The EPA's approval of the Idaho NPDES permit program was arbitrary and capricious in three ways. It approved of a mens rea standard that was stricter or greater than what EPA must comply with. It allowed for a statute of limitations period for civil violations that was unreasonably short, and it also allowed for an unauthorized state agency to oversee the feedlot industry in Idaho. These defects in the program are important because they undermine the minimum federal standards set out in the Clean Water Act and the EPA's implementing regulations that are designed to protect water quality in Idaho. And for these reasons, we ask the court to remand the EPA's approval to the EPA without vacature, and to give the state of Idaho 2 years to make the necessary statutory amendments to bring this into compliance and then resubmit the case to EPA for approval. I would like to then turn to each of the three issues in turn. First, the mens rea standard. The mens rea standard, I think, is a fairly challenging statutory construction question because the statute is so old. The regulation is so old. It was promulgated in 1984 before the amendment of the Clean Water Act in 1987. And that 1984 regulation was never updated. This is 40 CFR 12327B, which very clearly states that the burden of proof and the degree of knowledge of intent required under state law for establishing violations of paragraph A3 shall be no greater than the degree of knowledge of intent EPA must provide when it brings an action under the appropriate act. So this court has held in U.S. versus Hanasek that standard for EPA is simple negligence for misdemeanor violations of the Clean Water Act.
That was a case brought by EPA.
That's correct.
EPA agrees that that's its standard when it...
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes. But
that did not involve Idaho or any other state.
That's correct. And what 12327B says is that the state standard cannot be greater than EPA standard. An EPA standard is simple negligence.
If that were the only provision, we wouldn't be here today, probably.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But let's talk about why we're here.
Yes, but A3 in the note.
Let me just ask one question on Hanasek.
Yes.
Is it your position, or do you implicitly argue that before Hanasek that the EPA had to show a higher standard?
I think Hanasek definitely set the standard as simple negligence. And
how about before?
Before. I don't think we take a position on that, Your Honor. Arguably, they were required to take a higher standard before. I don't think courts had addressed that, and I don't know what EPA's position was before Hanasek.
So you take no... Hanasek just decided what the law was.
Hanasek had definitely interpreted Section 309C of the Clean Water Act after it was amended in 87, yes. In Section 309C in 1987 was bifurcated. Prior to 87 amendments,
right,
it said willful or negligent. And then after 87, it became
knowing.
Knowing, negligent or knowing.
Negligent or knowing for misdemeanors versus felonies. And that change in the statute was never reflected in EPA's regulations, which predate the 87 amendments. So,
why are we trying to kind of stick a square peg in a round hole here?
I agree.
So all of the briefing, both sides, is trying to take the A3 little two I's and reconcile it with the B2, et cetera. Why are we trying to do that?
Because that's what EPA relied on in the record.
Well, but does that make sense? I mean, so it seems to me that that's what the EPA said how they wanted to go about it. But then your argument is basically taking them at face value and saying, well, that's the argument to be made. If we look at our deference, if there's just a pure legal question of interpretation, is that something we're supposed to give our deference to?
I would say in this case, no, Your Honor. If you read Kaiser v. Wilkie, where they clearly, the Supreme Court recently clearly cabined the Auer deference quite a bit, and made it clear that if the interpretation was not reasonable, you should not give deference to the agency. And I think clearly this is not a reasonable interpretation of this regulation. This regulation really, if one buys their argument that the subsection A3II note applies to a generic intent standard, it basically does away with B. B goes away. That minimum standard that EPA clearly was trying to set under the Clean Water Act with subsection B language.
Let me ask you
is gone.
Before this Idaho situation, apparently there are 46 other states that had approval to do their own program.
That's correct, yes.
In any of those other programs, had the EPA ever required or mandated a higher standard or imposed a particular standard?
Well, that's not in the record, Your Honor, but if you look outside the record, they're all over the map. There's no rhyme or reason to why what state has 2 years versus...
On the statute of limitations, on the mens rea.
On the mens rea. They're all over the map on mens rea and on statute of limitations, but on mens rea, if you look...
So in some states... Some other states, they may a state's program might require the higher standard.
It's possible, yes. It's outside the record, and I think what.
Well, I'm not sure if it's outside the record. I can always take a look at other statutes.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
I'm just curious what was EPA's practice before Idaho? Did they have a?
Well, I have looked at those other states, Your Honor.
And nobody says anything. It's just like all of a sudden Idaho comes along, boom, the lights go off.
Lights go on and then they go off.
Right. Well, it's like all of a sudden, oh, this is really what it means.
This is a problem that's been on the books for quite some time and has been largely ignored. EPA, if you look at EPA's approvals over those 46 prior states, they are literally all over the map. There's no rhyme or reason to one or the other. They have not consistently interpreted this all along. Mm-hmm. And what we're saying is they've been wrong since 1987.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Ryan, you made two statements. I think the league's position is that we shouldn't even consider A3 little I's, right?
I think A3 little I was overturned in 87.
Okay, yes. They shouldn't even consider it.
Well,
right?
Certainly the note, yes.
Okay. Well, just the note?
It's hard to it's possible to constrain A3II without the note, but I think A3II is probably gone as well.
Okay, and you also said that if we interpret A3II the way EPA wants,
that's correct.
There is no A3. I mean,
no B.
B2.
That's correct.
I don't know, because B2. Seems to deal with more than just A3 little I's. It deals with the whole paragraph A3, which have other provisions. And why can't it be construed that B2 is a general proposition of the mens rea standard, mm-hmm. from which is carved out a specific exception, the only exception being A3 little I's. And why doesn't that give meaning to both of those provisions, which are in the document themselves, in the regulation?
That language made perfect sense in 1984 when it was written, before the Clean Water Act was amended.
Okay. And you're saying that it made sense before because
the standard
from willful
at the time,
to knowing?
The standard at the time was a joint standard for both misdemeanors and felonies of willful and or negligence, one standard. That language is reflected here.
Okay. So your position is before the amendment, it made sense, that it was
correct.
An exception.
That's correct. Before the amendment, this right. language made
so
sense.
So my interpretation is the general B2 was accepted, or at least it was a carve-out exception of A3 little 2, or little 2 I's. But that the amendment is the only thing that changed, and that basically did away with the note. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. The note was necessary because the combined standard. I'm sorry.
But the note is still there.
The note is still there.
That
yes.
were the intent.
EPA never amended this.
Well,
they should have.
I don't think it means anything. The note is still there or not. The question is, does it have any legal significance?
Because I would argue
we
no.
We could probably march through thousands of regulations that have become antiquated by additional
statutory.
So my question really is, Idaho has told the EPA that criminal negligence means gross negligence, something more than simple negligence.
That's correct.
And your position is that is at odds with the revised Clean Water Act language as interpreted by the federal courts. Is that right?
That's correct.
If that's the case, then I understand the remedy you've asked is a remand to give Idaho, to give the EPA, to give time for Idaho to come into compliance?
Yes. They would need to see statutory amendments at the state legislature. That's why we recommended a 2-year time period.
All right, let me go back. How is A, three little two lies now at odds with the amendment? The amendment broke civil and criminal, willful became knowing, and civil remained to be negligence without any further definition, right?
Right.
How is that at odds? I mean, I can see there's a slight difference between knowing and willful.
That's
but they,
correct,
they both conjure up deliberateness.
If we ignore,
I don't
if
see
we,
how that does. I just don't see how that does away. It makes it at odds.
If we ignore the note,
well, we can't. You keep saying ignore the note, but that was at least prior to the amendment.
Yes, that's
that
correct.
Was you concede that was in effect. So now tell me why the amendment puts that at odds.
Because the amendment now, the Congress, when it amended in 87, clearly said that there shall be misdemeanor violations proven by negligence, which this court has interpreted to be simple negligence, and then they're misdemeanors, which would be knowing, or excuse me, felonies, which would be knowing. They separated the two out. They made it very clear what was unclear in the pre-87 amendments. This is unclear here as to where you're supposed to go.
Let me ask you about the note itself. So the note says, states which provide the criminal remedies based on criminal negligence, gross negligence, or strict liability. Usually when you think of criminal negligence, you think of gross negligence. Why do you think that criminal negligence there just means negligence?
It's possible. I don't know what EPA was. This is a very confusing note. Your Honor, I've read this section 100 times, and I still don't understand what it's trying to say.
Because it has gross negligence, and as you know, the Idaho Supreme Court acknowledges in Idaho, criminal negligence is gross negligence. But it seems like maybe what the EPA was trying to do here was to give the states, you know, several options about how to, you know, how to create their criminal statutes.
I think you're correct, but in pre-87, that's what they were trying to do.
Nobody talks about strict negligence, so let's talk about that, or strict liability. So a state could have a statute under the old note that says any violation of this section is a criminal violation because there's strict liability. Would that be okay?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. And that would also be legitimate under the new framing?
Would a strict liability violation be legitimate under the new framing? I think that's actually stricter. That's actually more aggressive than what they have written now. So, yes, I believe it would.
So, well, it's hard because it's not greater than the current.
Yeah, it's not greater.
It's not greater than, in other words, sorry, you're out of luck. If you do it, you're out of luck. It doesn't matter what your degree of culpability is.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't this just be looked at as a way of giving the states an opportunity to devise different criminal remedies?
The states clearly...
And the EPA has interpreted, even though it's got criminal negligence, you know, that's... Well, that we really... Simple negligence
can also be used.
Yeah, clearly,
gross negligence can be used.
Clearly, the Act is set up to give the states some flexibility in setting up their programs. Section 402B, which is the section of the Clean Water Act in which EPA reviews these programs, is clearly set up to give some flexibility. But it's also designed to have minimum floor, minimum standards, which, under which the states should not go. And that's what we're talking about here. What are these minimum standards? And our position is that this old regulation doesn't meet the current minimum standards of the Clean Water Act.
I see.
Just to let you know, you're ticking down on your time.
I know. So I'd like to move on to statute of limitations, Your Honor. On statute of limitations, I think the two-year period is unreasonably short, given that in the record they proposed 2 to 5 years to on an inspection schedule, and then up to 2 years to develop a case. their statute of limitations is going to be gone on any violations they find during inspections. In many other cases that they bring, this is simply—it's an unreasonably short period. It's not required to be 5 years, as the federal standard is, but the 2 years period on the record we have before us is clearly quite short. And
in these prior other 46 states, have they? What kinds of statute limitations have they accepted?
Same answer as before, Your Honor. Right?
All over the board.
They're all over the board, and it's hard to make a rhyme or reason out of why EPA is doing one or the other. Now, one thing that
then why, with respect to Idaho, is it an abuse of discretion to approve a plan that has 2 years?
Because on the record before us, Your Honor, they say they're going to take 2 to 5 years for most of their inspections. They're going to inspect once every 2 to 5 years. And some of them infrequently as every 10 years.
Was it a discovery kind of trigger?
That's an issue that has not been resolved by the Idaho courts, or whether their statute of limitations is a discovery.
There's language in there that suggests that they built in a discovery.
Yeah. And the
I don't know what all I don't know.
And the Nancy
I have no idea what Idaho law is on, you know, discovery of an injury, you know.
And in our briefs, Your Honor, we discussed the Nancy Lee Mines interpretation of the discovery rule in Idaho, which seems to foreclose a discovery rule, which is also largely foreclosed in federal law as well.
You suggest what should be 5 years?
I think it depends on the record before us.
But your 5 years, or the EPA's 5 years, mm-hmm. is an occurrence.
Excuse me?
It's an occurrence.
Yes.
The occurrence. What the Idaho has, they have discovered, or should reasonably have discovered.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Discovered, or should have reasonably discovered the violation.
Right? Yeah, the standard in Idaho.
There are two different starting points, different apples and oranges, it seems
yeah,
to be.
Yeah, the Idaho standard is reasonably.
In some circumstances, the discovery could be longer. The statute of limitations could be longer because there was no discovery or no reason to discover.
Yeah, but if I'm a defendant in Idaho and on 2010 I have a violation and I'm inspected in 2014, and then it's 2 years later before they bring the enforcement action in 2016, the first argument I'm going to make is, you're 4 years past the statute of limitations. You ought to have found this. If you had devoted more resources to your inspection program, you would have found this violation. And it was there for the world to see. You just didn't look. That's my first argument as a defendant in Idaho if they bring that case against me.
Probably going to be very successful.
Right. I think we have your argument in mind. Thank you.
I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Patrick Jacoby from the U.S. Department of Justice. On behalf of the United States Environmental Protection Agency, with me at counsel's table is Courtney Weber from EPA's Region 10 office. Your Honors, rather than giving a formal intro, I'm going to jump in on a couple of the issues that you've raised. First, Judge Paez, you asked if other states were on the criminal remedy and the heightened mens rea criminal penalty standard. In the state's brief, which is document, just make sure I get the right number here for you, document ID number 11453255, it's document entry 42 in this case, on page 43 of footnote 6, there's a list from a survey of 30 other state program approvals dating back to the inception of the Clean Water Act, and it reveals that 15 states were approved with heightened criminal penalty standards. that are higher than ordinary negligence. So to answer that question first, and I think that does go, Your Honor, to the flexibility. And then you asked also about where other states were on the statute of limitations. On page 51 of our brief, which is docket entry 37 in this case, we note in footnote 15 that there are a number of states that have shorter than a two-year statute of limitations. So I think looking to other states is useful and instructive, and I just wanted to fill in those blanks as we start.
Why don't you start with the EPA's position on negligence? In reading the EPA's correspondence with Idaho and in conjunction with the federal case law, it appears that EPA's position is that negligence means simple negligence. Is that correct?
Your Honor, there's no question and there's no debate in this case that when EPA is seeking to enforce the Clean Water Act for criminal negligence, that the mens rea is simple or ordinary negligence. But
okay.
EPA's position in its regulations, which have been on the books for quite some time, is that that's not necessarily the case when a state gets approval. And so if you look at...
This is where I feel like the EPA is not consistent, because if you look at B2, it says that the burden shouldn't be greater than the EPA has when it brings an enforcement action under Clean Water Act. And you've now told me that the EPA's burden for negligence, we'll leave knowing or willful aside, is simple negligence, correct?
I think if I understand your question, yes, Your Honor, the EPA's burden is simple negligence, and I agree with you that the words in 127.23b2 say what they say, but if I may take it out just a little more broadly.
Sure.
So in this approval, EPA was tasked with trying to figure out what these two provisions mean side by side, A3, small double I, and B2. And so in order to give meaning to every word of the statute of the regulations, they had to look at which section is more specific, which section is more general. And so I think if I may just lay this out for how it's supposed to work in EPA's mind, this is how it starts. B2 talks about establishing violations, okay, and it addresses criminal and civil types of actions. It uses the phrase actions generally. Mm-hmm. It refers then to establishing violations, and then it goes immediately to under paragraph A3. So right there you've got a specific reference out of B2 saying there's going to be some more information coming in A3 that could be more specific about how to establish these violations. And then if you come back to B2 for a second, then it talks about not having a higher burden of proof or intent standard for the types of actions that EPA might seek. What that means in this reading that EPA has set forth in trying to reconcile A3 and B2 is that a state must have the same types of actions generally that EPA would be able to seek. For example, negligence. For example, they have to be able to bring civil cases. And so it's supposed to generally address those. It doesn't use the word negligence in B2 like the way it does in A3, which is more specific. It doesn't use the word willful. It doesn't have a note like the one in A3, small double I.
I hear your argument, McGinn. I just want to tell you my problem with the argument and then have you address it. But my problem is this. It's that when you're talking about a burden of proof, that is very clear and straightforward. It refers you back to the kind of violations that one might apply that to in A3. But the statute changed. And when the language of the statute changed and the regulation was not changed to conform with the language of the statute, why is it we're trying to fit the two together at this late stage? Because it seems that in Idaho that you basically need gross negligence in order to have criminal negligence, not simple negligence. And that might have made sense under the old language, but those are not words that are even used in the current statute. So why are we trying to reconcile a note which has not been amended with a statute that has? And what's your support for that?
Judge McEwen, I think this goes to Judge Paez's question. The standard for negligence in Section 1319, that's 33 U.S.C. 1319, did not change between before the 1987 amendments and after. It doesn't say gross negligence in Section 1319. It didn't say it before. In fact, the only two changes to that provision that occurred in the 1987 amendments is two changes. One, changes, as we discussed, as you discussed with the petitioner, willful to knowing. Okay, and then instead of being one section, it split it off into two. Nothing about the language regarding negligence, nor even the penalties, changed in that 1987 Clean Water Act amendment. Nothing changed with regard to mens rea being referenced in that section because it has never referenced mens rea. So I think what Judge Paez was getting at is that HANUSA could have been issued before the 1987 amendments. There's nothing that would have stopped the court from saying it was simple ordinary negligence. In other words, the 1987 amendment has no bearing on the language in 127.23A3II, nor the note in that section. And the reason is the note and that language are more specific than anything than is in the Clean Water Act provision 1319 before or after the Clean Water Act amendments. And frankly,
it reads B2 out. We don't need B2.
Your Honors, I think...
I mean, so why doesn't it read B2 out under your interpretation?
Respectfully, I don't think it reads B2 out because, again, and if you look at the response, the comments, and the full explanation EPA gives, it's trying to figure out how to have these two provisions work in tandem, give meaning to every word, have the specific control of the general. B2 is, by definition, more general. It doesn't include the word negligence. Well, let me give you an example. There could be... if you look at the note in B2, so not the note in A3II, but the note in B2, okay, that note says that a state cannot require a mens rea for a civil violation. Okay, so that means that B2 is supposed to be addressing these general categories of what a state has to be able to enforce. They have to be able to go after certain types of criminal and civil violations. Some of those violations differ in terms of the general mens rea that applies. Negligence is different than willful or knowing. Civil doesn't have a mens rea. It's different than criminal. The point.
How does that solve anything to our problem? I mean,
Your Honor, it
doesn't move the ball to the argument on either side, it seems to me.
Your Honor, I think it gives B2 meaning, is what I'm trying to say. So B2 is a general provision to say a state has to have, and this goes back to Section 402B7, a state has to have adequate authority to abate, permit, and other violations of the Clean Water Act. And the way that EPA sort of begins that discussion generally is looking in 127.23B2 and saying, do you have the ability to enforce for negligent violations? Do you have the ability to enforce for willful, knowing
violations?
And the
answer is yes. But what standard are you using? And under the federal standard, it can't be higher than simple negligence. And under Idaho, it's gross negligence. So do you agree that gross negligence is more than simple negligence?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And so, if I may, B2 establishes...
Do you have any internal departmental documents that reconcile these sections?
Your Honor, I don't believe it's come up before in any litigation that I'm aware of. I'd want to check with EPA counsel on that.
I mean, the reason I ask for that is that we have the EPA marching down the road over here saying, well, we think there's a problem. And then they say it again, and there's a problem because negligence means simple negligence, and you have gross negligence. So march, march, and then boom, we get a final answer in response to a comment on the public proceedings that says, well, no, it's okay. So my question is, I mean, it doesn't seem like there's a deliberative process here, in which case we could say, well, EPA really considered the pros and cons in this. We have these other states. We're trying to figure out how to reconcile 50 state laws, which is not an easy thing to do. So that's why I'm asking, whether there is anything else, and absent anything else, does the single changed response qualify as a considered judgment under our?
There's a number of questions in there, Your Honor.
There are.
I'll pick whichever one you want. I'll do my best to start, and you tell me where you need me to go once we get going here. So to start with, I would take this court back to the Defenders of Wildlife versus National Association of Home Builders case, which was a case under 1342. It was a state approval for the state of Arizona. And there's language in that case because the challenger in that case tried to say, well, EPA said something during the process of developing this approval that's different than what it said in the end. Okay, and because of the way these transfer proceedings work, what the court said there is, look, EPA can say something at the beginning of this process as it's trying to figure out how to almost negotiate with the state about what the terms are going to be in a robust discussion. It doesn't have to be exactly the same as where it ends up at the end. It can change its mind in this proceeding. So to begin with, yes, EPA did on a number of issues, mainly the three that he has raised here, that ICL has raised here, and including on this regulation, it did sort of change the way it's approaching this.
And that's fair enough. I mean, that happens in these state-federal approval process.
Absolutely. So then what you have is you have EPA trying to reconcile this. And if you look at the record, once EPA raises this concern with the state comes back and says, well, we think you're reading 127A3 small double I out of the statute. And you're not giving enough weight to that language. And so EPA went back, as it should, as a federal agency, and took another look at the provision and tried to figure out how to make these two provisions work together, and came up with an interpretation, announced in its response to comments, that was signed by the approval was signed by the administrator, the proposal was put out by the regional administrator. There were, you know, a comment period, you've got response to comments. And so this, at this point, this is the reasoned, considered official word on this issue from EPA, issued by the agency itself, in a formal document. And so to begin with, that's where, you know, I think if you're getting at the first criteria of Kaiser, our deference, this is the official's agency, the official agency position, I would say yes. This is not some sort of informal document. This is not a letter. This is not guidance. This is a response to comments regarding this approval. And getting back to, and
where is that established in the record? How is it established in the record?
I'm sorry, what?
How is that established in the record that it was approved at the appropriate authority level?
The approval itself in the Federal Register was signed by the administrator. The response to comments, I think, comes. I would double check the record. Don't hold me to this, but I think the response to comments, it comes from EPA and is posted on the website around the same time. So it's sort of.
But it was approved at the appropriate authority to make it official.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The approval is not so much as to the comment as to the final approval of the Idaho plan, correct?
Yes, the approval of the IPDS,
right,
if you will, was signed by the administrator. So you've got so it meets the first factor. And going back to how we get to the three factors in Kaiser, what the Supreme Court is saying is, look, you've got, before we get to these three factors that I think you're referring to, Judge McKeown, you've got to try to use the traditional tools of statutory construction to figure out if you even need Kaiser deference. And so what EPA did here is it took a look at every word. It had the specific govern the general in these two provisions. It looked at the statutory or the regulatory history in which the note to A3II was added, and references to 1319 and B2 were removed. Okay, so it looked at all that. It looked at 1342B of the Clean Water Act, which only requires adequate authority to obey. It doesn't require the same standard exactly. And it said, okay, the way for us to give meaning to all these words and to try to resolve what appears to be ambiguity is to look at B2 as a general statute, a general provision, the way I was discussing with you, Judge McCown, and that the specifics laid out in A3II have to govern. Okay, so it has done its job under the first part of Kaiser to say, can we figure this out? Is there a way to resolve this?
What else does it apply to, B2?
It would apply to any state approval application where a state is going to get enforcement authority for NPDES. It would require the state to have the same types of actions available to it.
No, but I mean, that's a bureaucratic answer. I'm sorry, but with respect, I'm trying to get like a practical answer. So it says it applies under A3. Does it apply? Is it used in any other context? That is B2 used in any other context other than A3?
Well, Judge McEwen, I think to begin with, I don't think you can read B2 in a vacuum because it refers to A3. It says violations established under paragraph
A3. So let's
A3.
Go back to my question.
Right.
Maybe there's not an answer to it, but my answer, my question is there any other context in which B2 applies other than the language in A3?
And let me help you see if I can help you answer that question. One of the problems with using ellipses here, you leave out some information, but it appears clear to me that...
Well, why don't we let him answer?
Let's
let him answer. I want the EPA's position, because the EPA interpreted this, so let's hear what EPA says.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think I understand the question better now. I appreciate the clarification. If a state applied for NPDES authority and submitted a package in which it did not establish that it has the ability to seek to enforce against negligent violations, regardless, negligent criminal violations, civil violations, let's just leave it at negligent criminal violations, regardless of the mens rea, even if the mens rea in the state were generally ordinary negligence, if it did not establish that it was going to be able to enforce against negligent violations generally, or willful knowing violations generally, then B2 would apply because the state's application would be by the general language in B2
deficient. Okay.
And so that's, I think, what it means. And to come back to the note in B2, and I don't want to overemphasize this because I'm more interested in the note in A3II, but the note in B2 makes clear how B2 works a little bit. It's saying, look, you have to have these civil and criminal types of actions, and they have to be similar or the same to the ones that EPA has in general. And here's an example of how this works. You can't have a requirement that for a civil violation, somebody has to prove a mens rea. Civil violation is a violation, period, right? And so that's, I think, the clarity you're looking for. So that's how I see it as applying.
Okay.
Give me 1 second. I'm going to look at my EPA counsel and just make sure she agrees with me. Just because I'm going well beyond what's in the briefs on that answer to some extent. So I want to
be focusing on two little I, right? It suggests to me there's at least one other I, maybe more. Do you know what one I is, or if there's a three I? Because that would indicate what paragraph B2 is referring to in the general statement, paragraph A3.
Sure, Your Honor. Do you mind if I grab it?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Because I think people have, to this point, have just use that one small section, two little I. And I'll confess I've not read it.
All right. Okay. So I'm looking at 40 CFR 123.27A, which is titled, any state agency administering program shall have available the following remedies for violations of state program requirements. When I get to three, it starts with to assess or sue to recover in court civil penalties and to seek criminal remedies, including fines, as follows. One refers to civil penalties. It says civil penalties shall be recoverable for the violation of any NPDES permit condition, and goes on from there. Two says criminal fines shall be recoverable against any person who willfully or negligently violates. And three also relates to criminal fines, but it's regarding knowingly false statements. So
it could refer to, paragraph B2 could refer to one and three, but not two because of the note.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand the question. Are you saying
the question was, what does B2 refer to when it says under paragraph A3 of the section? And we've been focusing on 2I, but there are two other sections. So it seems to me the argument you made that it refers to 1I and 3I.
I see my time is almost up.
Please answer the question.
Your Honor, I want to make sure I'm understanding your question because I don't want to answer it in a way that I later think is incorrect. So if I could ask for some clarity, but let me tell you what I think you're asking me, and then you help me. So in B2, you're saying that it says establishes violations under A3. And I would say, in general, I think it's referring to all of A3, the civil and criminal pieces. You're saying here
that's fine. I agree with that. But there's an exception only with regard to one of the subsections, and that's A3-2, or 2-I's.
So are you saying, Your Honor, that the exception is the listing in the note of specific types of mens rea that are sufficient, that might be different from EPA's?
I'm just trying to determine what the reference to under paragraph A3 refers to.
I think it refers to all of A3. And I would just say, to the extent you're using the word exception, I just say I think it's clearer, it's more specific.
Is it significant that the note is under little 2i? Does that have any significance?
It is to me. I think that means it applies
to little 2i.
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
Little 2.
And does gross negligence figure in at all now in the federal enforcement system?
Not under Section 1319, Your Honor.
Anywhere else?
And that's the misdemeanor.
I believe that's correct. I believe there are other places in the Clean Water Act where the phrase gross negligence is used, but it's not in that
section. But not in this context.
Not in this exact context, no.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I see that I'm over time. For these reasons and the reasons in our brief, which we didn't discuss, we ask that you deny the petition.
You have a little bit of time for a rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just real briefly on the EPA's changing of position, the Federal Register notice, which approved the Idaho NPDES permit program, was issued by EPA. And I believe signed by the administrator, but it makes no mention of the mens rea standard. If you look at ER 73 and ER 75, those are the approval letter. Those are the letters from the regional administrator of EPA to Idaho in 2016, saying you have mens rea problems. And then the second letter, ER 75, is from the division director of the Region 10 Water Division. So these are not low level. Email correspondence going back. These are official positions by EPA to the state of Idaho.
But that wasn't the final position, was it?
I'm sorry?
It was not the final position.
No, the final position obviously was that it was.
I mean, they were saying we have a problem,
comments.
But they didn't take a final position till the end, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, the final position is in the response to comments. And I see I have 16 seconds left.
Use it however you want.
Thank you, Your Honor. With that, I think we will just rest on our briefs. Thank you.
Thank you both for the argument and the briefing. The case just argued, Idaho Conservation League versus EPA, is submitted, and we're adjourned for the morning.